medical community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest on-air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success. All right, well, we're picking up where we left off last week in our conversation on what is a BA, and you might be a BA if. Last week, we covered kind of roles and responsibilities and helping everybody understand at maybe a more detailed level what a typical day looks like and all the various hats you might wear. Today, we're going to talk more about where BAs come from and delve into the attributes and skills that basically help you in your day-to-day in this particular position. Before we jump right into business, why don't you give everybody a quick Rita update? How was Agility this week?
Agility was fabulous this week. I was on point. She was on point. Sometimes we're not on the same page together. That usually isn't as fun. And the courses were flowy, which she really loves when the obstacles flow together really well. And it was a course where there was a little bit more space between each obstacle. So it opens up and she can run, which she loves nothing more than to race me through an agility course. That is like her goal in life. So I end up at the end, you know, bent over, hands on knees, panting like the dog.
Wow. I can only imagine. So on days that you do agility, are you also bookending and running in the morning as well?
Yeah, I usually have probably a 4 to 5 mile run on Thursday mornings and then agility at night. Now, the morning run, I'm not doing any speed work. I'm just out for a nice, easy run. But come Thursday night, I'm usually pretty tired.
Okay. Well, I'm guessing that Fridays then are a walk slash rest day.
Fridays are a walk slash recovery day because Rita still wakes up in the morning thinking, it's a good day to be alive and we should go outside for a walk, Mom.
Wow. I like Rita's attitude. Well, there's everybody's update on Rita this week. And why don't we jump right back into business? Chandra, your path to becoming a BA came straight out of the business, correct?
Yes, it did. I came out of the business. As we covered in our introductory podcast, I started as an accountant. So my undergraduate degree was in accounting, did the whole public accounting, CPA route, moved into private industry, still doing accounting for various firms for a number of years. And then I started actually with a company, a manufacturing company, as a contract accountant, and they were using JDE. So that was my first introduction to the software. I was covering for an individual who was on maternity leave. So it was just supposed to be a fairly short contract, and it kept getting extended. They had me stay on to work on some special projects. One of those projects was turning on two-way match within JD Edwards so that we could use that to submit POs and track and record payments on capital projects. It gave us a little bit more visibility into how much we were really spending, if we were having overages when we budgeted capital projects. As I kept getting that extended, they actually offered me a role as a senior operations business analyst. Despite having the business analyst title, I actually did not do as much business analyst. I was still very much focused in accounting. I did a lot of month-end work, year-end work, audit prep work, and a lot of budget work. I built a fairly complicated model for logistics budgeting, looking at different methods of transportation and building out a model to be able to predict where our budget dollars were going to be, depending on what method of transportation we were using. From there, I got more experience with JD Edwards, got data browser access, and got to poke around some of the tables a little bit, learning what table housed what information. And from there, I still stayed in accounting. I got promoted into an accounting manager role, still managing a lot of accounting processes, year-end, month-end, budgets. One of the projects that I had worked on was to move our financials from JD Edwards into a third-party tool. Because Paul, well, let's just say it's probably not much of a secret, but financials and the report outputs within JD Edwards leave a little bit to be desired.
I've heard that before, yes.
Opportunity for improvement, maybe.
Or an opportunity for our community who has since probably plugged that gap, if you will, and filled that hole with several third-party offerings out there that do a much better job than we currently do.
Yes. Within that tool, they also had a query tool. And that query tool I started using to run some out-of-the-box queries that came with it. And as a part of that, it would generate a SQL statement off to the side so I could see what it was doing when it was running said query. And that was very much of interest to me and helped me be able to build some other queries within the tool itself on my own. So kind of learning SQL. I've always been a fairly quick learner when it comes to software. I can pick up different softwares fairly quickly. JD Edwards was pretty intuitive for me. I struggled more probably with the technical aspect of digging into tables and relationships and understanding some of that at first. Mm. So then I officially joined the dark side in IT as a business analyst in 2016 for another manufacturing company.
So early on with your experience with JD Edwards, you know, you note that you pick up various software products pretty easily. You know, you come up to speed pretty quick. Was there anything specific that was intuitive about JD Edwards or not so intuitive?
From an intuitive perspective, once you understand the base functionality, it really applies similarly across all the modules. Headers and your details, tables and the screens really are fairly consistent across the board. So to me, that helps make it more intuitive, at least from a user perspective.
So the design patterns that we followed were consistent enough that they could be applied from one module to another, and that made it easy to learn and predictable. I think predictable is probably a good thing.
Absolutely. Predictability is a good thing.
But, you know, we're also, you know, we're here to help people understand not only the paths, but the skills and attributes. Some of the things you mentioned about exploring SQL to try to understand how it works. I pick up on you're a self-starter. It helps to be a self-starter in this role. It helps to be curious, right? You have a curiosity about not just do you like knowing what it does and why, but how? How does it actually work? And being a self-starter, you're willing to go out there and explore to try and gain that understanding. And that has benefited you throughout your career, I assume.
That is correct. Having that curiosity, that willingness to learn, mm-hmm. is definitely beneficial for business analysts because the learning never stops. You aren't ceasing investment in the product. You're continuing to invest. You're continuing to make things different, make new technology within it, or allow for us to use other technologies with JD Edwards.
Yeah, I mean, we're continually introducing new methods, new ways of doing things. Your toolbox, we like to call it your JDE toolbox. We continue to try to expand that on a fairly frequent basis. So I can see where there's always opportunity to learn something new, but it's not always within that toolbox. My guess would be while you came up through financials with a financials background for a manufacturing company, my guess is you got exposed to a lot of other modules that you had to pick up and learn, and you get asked about feature functionality that may or may not be there that you have to go explore and find out. So there's always opportunity to learn something new.
when somebody asks a question in AP, it might actually be that the functionality is on the purchasing side, where I might have to dig into a different module. Manufacturing, clearly, we use the configurator. We use stock and non-stock. We had a lot of complicated setup. And unfortunately, or fortunately, as depending on how you want to look at it from a financials perspective, that was my area of focus as a BA. I was supporting financials. But I always said, all of the challenges or opportunities, whatever you might call them, end up in finance. So I kind of have to know enough about how they got there, how those transactions got there, and where they came from.
Right.
So stepping backward through the system to figure out where the problem might have originated or occurred.
The path to a T account is you have to learn that. I mean, because everything has its path to a T account. We know this, and understanding where a transaction may have originated and how it came to be where it now is important. So speaking of paths, so you took the path through the business, which is, you know, probably one of the more common traditional paths that, you know, for business analysts, but it's not the only path.
In addition to coming through the business, which I would agree that has been probably the primary method for a lot of people, has been, you know, they get exposed to the software in the business, whether it's in accounting or maybe they're specific in warehousing or purchasing or some other area. And then they end up, you know, interested in doing more. They become your super user or your power user, depending on how you may classify them. And they have a very good understanding of a specific module, and they move into being a business analyst that might support that specific module, depending on the size of the organization. Now I'm seeing more fresh college graduates come in as business analysts, where they might get a degree, a general business degree, or like what you did, a CIS degree, but instead of going more technical, they might go and focus more on the business. Through your CIS, you mentioned you learned, you know, some about business, some about programming, and they come in, they're able to pick up the business, they're able to pick up the technical components because they've had some exposure probably to databases and relationships and stuff that I never got.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you learn just enough about each side to be dangerous. But again, if you're looking for someone that has a set of skills that might align with a business analyst, well, yeah, that degree really does touch on all of them. It gives you the business functional side of the house while at the same time giving you a bit of the technical, so you can, you know, you know this person who, if they got a degree in computer information systems, has an interest in the things that you value when it comes to being a business analyst.
In addition, there are folks that come out of development into business analyst roles. The developers obviously have a very strong technical background. They understand what they might have programmed and how it works, but they want to see more, they want a bigger picture. They want to see how that impacts the business. But again, they're curious. They have a desire to learn something new and different. They can also transition into the role of business analyst. The area that might be lacking for them is more understanding of business. So depending on which route you take, if you're coming into a business analyst role from the business, you might lack some of that technology expertise. But if you're coming at it from a developer path, you'll have the technological piece, but you may not have a really good understanding of business. Not that either is wrong. They're both good. It might just depend on what your organization needs. If they need somebody more technical, you might want to see if there's a developer that's interested in transitioning, versus if you're looking for somebody that might be more functional, you might want somebody from the business.
So I would reiterate a couple of things there. Regardless of your path, having a healthy curiosity and a willingness to learn and be a self-starter about whatever that gap is. So coming from the business, you have to have a healthy curiosity about technology. And if you already know programming and the technology side, you have to have a healthy curiosity about the business side and how people are using your software. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the attributes, maybe the skills, you know, involved in this job. We touched on, in our previous conversation, we touched on a couple of those things we do day to day, like gathering requirements and decomposing those requirements. What is the primary skill or attribute that you would be looking for or you know, looking to hone to make you good at that aspect of your job?
Communication. Sum it up in one word. But that includes not just talking, that includes listening. Having active listening skills, if you will, being able to repeat back to a user what they just said, maybe in a different way, to see if they're like, oh yeah, or no, that's not what I meant. Because sometimes we don't always communicate in a fashion where whoever is receiving the communication understands what you're really trying to say. Being able to communicate well allows you to ask a lot of questions because we all know users come to us with their requirements. And well, sometimes those requirements aren't quite correct. You start asking more questions and you're like, so what you're really trying to accomplish is XYZ, not ABC.
I imagine you get requirements like I do. They come many times in the form of a solution. Make it do this, or give me a processing option for that, or I want to be able to see this. And what's lacking is, well, what are you trying to accomplish and why, right? What is your end game? Don't tell me what your solution is. Help me understand what problem you're trying to solve and why it's important. Is that fair?
No, I've never submitted a My Oracle support ticket saying, please add a processing option for blah. Okay, yes.
I may have evidence that is contrary to that statement.
Fair. Yes, I tried to provide the solution without telling you the why.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so I am guilty of it as well.
Yes.
That's been a good lesson to learn as we've had these conversations that I apply to my path with Oracle as well. Realizing that it's not just about me providing a solution. It's about also saying, here's the reason why I need this, and this is what I'm trying to accomplish.
Or, I'm trying to instill that same discipline in your users is, you know, if you can get your users to approach you that way, life is just so much easier.
It is. It is much easier. And and what that does, you know, it allows for you to cultivate active participation in requirements gathering, where they're going to be active if they can approach you to say, hey, this is what I want to accomplish. You might be able to solve it with not necessarily needing to add some functionality within JD Edwards. There could be something that could be handled outside of JD Edwards that may get them to where they need to be.
So that's with people approaching you with requirements and new feature functionality. I suppose they also approach you with, obviously, issues. So on the one hand, it's really nice when, you know, we get the, hey, we're you know, can JD Edwards do this? Let's make it do that in order to accomplish this. That's the fun side, perhaps, of the house. Now, some people consider this other side pretty fun, too, but it can be somewhat negative. The troubleshooting side, right? The issues, they come to you with their issues. What are some of the attributes and skills you employ there?
Communication. Ask lots of questions. Listen.
Same.
Yes. That does actually come into play there as well. It is important. Mm-hmm. I know from my experiences over the years, there have been many times where I have been troubleshooting an issue and I go back to the user to ask some follow-up questions and they reveal a bit more information. And at that point, I'm like, that would have been nice to have known about 2 hours ago when I started this process. They think they know the issue, or they think that the issue is here. When I can find out that three steps ahead of it, they had an issue with something else.
This gets back to a comment you probably hear very often, like trust but verify. You can trust the information that they're giving you, but you can also trust that it's likely only part of the story. They're likely, you know, trimming the story back and withholding information that they don't think is pertinent to the situation. And you have to be, you know, to your point about active listening, it's not just what you're hearing, it's also what you're not being told, what you're not hearing, that you have to then delve into and be able to extract. You know, are they avoiding a particular topic, you know, and perhaps, you know, that there's a reason, and, you know, they don't always know what information is relevant. So more information is better. So
more information is always better. I would rather have them write out a novel when they submit a ticket than it doesn't work. That's my favorite. It's broken. Mm. I get a red error message and then they don't include the error message.
My favorite has always been, I get this error and then I get a screenshot that proves that they got the error, as if proving to me that the error happened is helpful in letting me know what the heck they were doing when they got the error. I get no steps to duplicate. I get nothing. I just get, here's the error and here's a screenshot of it. See, I told you. I was never really questioning whether or not you got the error. I'm just... okay, awesome. So
that never happens. I don't know what you're talking about. Only goodness. Almost every day.
Yes, exactly.
Ready to accelerate your JDE skills and knowledge? Join Paul and me and the rest of the JD Edwards community at Blueprint 4D in Dallas, Texas, May 7th through 10th, 2024. Get the latest Oracle updates, learn about new customer innovations, and dive into hot topics like Release 24, enterprise automation, orchestrations, personalizations, extensibility, and more. To register, visit questoraclecommunity.org/blueprint4D.
And every day then you're interacting with various personalities and a lot of different people. I mean, I know in my interactions, you know, with users when I'm troubleshooting issues, you know, some can be helpful and open and excited. Others can be, well, frustrated, upset, demeaning.
Yes.
So
yes,
I imagine having thick skin is a prerequisite, as well as something like emotional intelligence comes into play daily.
Emotional intelligence is very important in my job. I want to maintain a high level of empathy for my users. I do understand how frustrating it is when something doesn't work. That being said, it does not give them the right to demean you or be mean to you. So sometimes there are some more difficult conversations that have to happen, but having them happen in a professional yet supportive way to understand, I understand your frustration. I truly know where you're coming from. Realizing that it's not personal, being able to, you know, take that step back and no, it's not a personal attack on me per se. It might be a personal attack on the software, or they just feel like they have no control over solving the issue. Trying to keep that in mind as well.
Never take it personal is a, you know, a good piece of advice, obviously. So when you're talking to those folks out of the business, or you're talking to a potential developer, college grad, to see if they would be a good fit for, you know, in this position, you have to be able to evaluate then how they're going to respond in difficult conversations. And because there is going to be pressure. I mean, with the business needing to get their day-to-day done and the software preventing it from happening in some way, shape, or form, there's going to be emotion involved and pressure, and you have to be okay troubleshooting and working, you know, working in those conditions.
100%. You have to be okay with that. So having questions framed up when you're interviewing a potential BA that are behavioral or situational based questions are important. And it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, tell me how a time where you've dealt with a difficult user. Because if you're interviewing somebody that might be fresh out of school, they may not have that experience. Mm-hmm. Being able to reframe the question where they might have had to deal with a difficult communication to understand how they've communicated it, mm-hmm. might have been an interaction with a professor in college and how they handled that, how they asked different questions, how they listened. Being able to tee up those questions to understand that they either have emotional intelligence or have the capability to build it. It's something mm-hmm. I continue to work on. It's not...
I think we all
do. It continues to evolve. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It continues to evolve. And I learn things every day in the various communications that I have. And some of those are with users and some of those are with leadership, and how I communicate between those groups of individuals is going to be different.
Totally makes sense. In your troubleshooting efforts, we mentioned many times about the resources and leveraging various resources. We asked, you know, what tools do you absolutely need in your day-to-day? And you mentioned, you know, data browser, SQL, FastPath, as well as, of course, going out to MyOracle support. Again, being in this position, being very resourceful would be very beneficial.
Being resourceful is incredibly important. As you mentioned, all of those tools, whether it's data browser, FastPath, SQL, whether it's additional people, network, if you will, is hugely important. That is one of the biggest areas that I think has helped me be successful. Mm-hmm. Having a network to be able to ask questions to when I get stuck on an issue. Hey, has anybody ever run into XYZ? Of course, I can go search my Oracle support, and I do. That is probably one of the first areas I will check just to see if it's a known issue. If not, I can guarantee you I'll fire off an email or pick up the phone and ask, hey, have you guys ever run into this? Mm-hmm. Has anybody ever seen this?
Right.
So having that network, and I developed mine through attending conferences, through attending SIG events, special interest groups, for those that may not be familiar with that term, they're part of Quest. So if you haven't signed up to join one, I encourage you to do so.
Three-letter acronym plug for the Lingo Show.
Absolutely. We definitely need to include that one in our JDE Lingo Show. Our RUGs, there's another one for you, regional user groups. Those are a great way as well, where the meetings occur sometimes quarterly, sometimes once or twice a year, depending on the regional user group. That's a really great way to get to know things. Webinars and staying up to date through, whether it's even vendor-sponsored webinars, where you can learn about whether it's something new. But it can help you get connected to other people, because sometimes questions are asked and there's some interaction between it. Being involved with Quest from the perspective of there's forums.
You know, bottom line, you want to connect with this community. And the beauty of the JD Edwards community is that it is a pretty close-knit community. So it's not hard once you become part of this ecosystem. It's really not hard to quickly establish relationships and build out a fairly broad network. And within that network, you know, you want to get a variety of backgrounds. So not just other business analysts, which is good, right? But business analysts that maybe specialize in different modules, and also some of those other players that you interact with on a daily basis, including your CNC folks, you know, your sysadmins, as well as developers, as well as consultants. to name a few off the top of my head, that you'll want to have in your network of folks that you can reach out to?
I don't want to just be connected to BAs. I want to understand more from a CNC perspective. If we run into an issue that my CNC team might be struggling with, I can reach out to another CNC and say, hey, have you ever run into this? Have you guys experienced this?
Right.
Ask around. And I have found within the community, you mentioned it being a close-knit community, I have found people are always willing to share when you ask them. It's not a, I'm not going to tell you. You have to learn it on your own. I learned it on my own.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't see much of that attitude in this community. Information tends to be power, but this information or this community tends to be a very sharing and kind of it's an open book, if you will. Now, in our opener, you mentioned project management and the need to, you know, when there are initiatives to roll out new business processes or adopt new feature functionality that enhance existing business processes, many times, you know, those initiatives require some level of product management that in order to lay them out, execute them, and whatnot. Could you describe, you know, your experience in that area, or at least give maybe some examples to folks about what that looks like, what that entails, and maybe some of the skills that you lean on to be successful?
Yeah, within project management, of course, that covers such a wide breadth of topics. Project management is big, right? When you look at it, when you're trying to manage an entire project from start to finish, there's a lot that comes into play. So being organized, obviously, would be one of those skills for being in project management and detail-oriented as well. When it comes to understanding a project, the different phases that you might go through, where you might be outlining your requirements, then you might move into your configuration, then you might move into your build phase, then you might move into your post-production support phase. And within those, there'll be various tasks under each of those categories. But also understanding the risk. You know, how do you mitigate risk? How do you manage your risk within your organization? Or if your organization might be publicly held or governmental, where you have different standards that you have to keep in mind, how do you make sure that you're keeping that risk minimal? So you're not exposing your organization to potential liabilities by putting something in your system that shouldn't be there. And understanding your cost-benefit analysis, being able to determine your return on that investment, if you will. You know, we're going to spend how many thousands of dollars to implement some functionality within the ERP system. Let's make sure we know how much that is going to cost as well in terms of hours that your BAs may be spending on the implementation or your developers or your CNC or all of the above. And then being able to understand from the business perspective what they're going to get from, what benefit they're going to derive, and how to place a dollar value on that benefit. To make sure that you are getting a good return on your investment. With that also comes afterward, okay, did we actually get that return? And are we continuing to get that return? In other words, is the business still using this?
So you don't just want to calculate an ROI as a way of selling the project and, you know, the idea of adopting something new, you know, for improvement, but you mean you actually want to identify a success criteria and then track it to see that the business actually realized that return?
Well, that would be the ideal state, Paul.
Feels like we just went back into that fantasy land where we have perfect software again. those skills that you talked about, though, I mean, with it, you came in with an accounting degree, you got your MBA. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's project management courses that you're taking, but I assume, or can I assume, is it fair to assume that there's a lot of on-the-job experience and a lot of on-the-job learning that happens, and this is one of those areas where, you know, project management in theory versus project management in the real world are two different things?
Correct. I did take a full semester of project management as part of my grad school program and did really well in the course. Actually, really enjoyed that course a lot. And then took a break from it because I didn't do as much of it when I was still an accountant, because that's when I did my MBA. I was still in accounting. When I got into the world of business analytics, I didn't do much project management in detail at the first company that I worked for. Where I currently am at, we have a project management department, a PMO office, if you want to call it that, with people that manage our larger scale projects. But I still am responsible for some of the smaller projects of managing them. Now, I don't have to get to the level of detail necessarily as a cost-benefit analysis or a risk management, aside from keeping security in mind, clearly. Mm-hmm. That has been more of the area where I think it has been learned on the job, and having the theoretical background has been helpful. Mm-hmm. But the reality is each organization might track their projects differently, might want different pieces of information along the way, but at least the concept is still there.
Now, we talked, so let's just recap a few of these, and then I'll ask about one other attribute that I think we should touch on. But we've talked about communication. I think, you know, your curiosity, your willingness to ask questions, the desire to learn, resourcefulness, like we just covered. We talked about emotional intelligence, troubleshooting, problem solving. You know, all of those also involve like critical thinking. I mean, that's a huge skill we employ, I think, on a daily basis. A lot of what we just talked about that ends up being fairly structured, right? You can imagine things, there's patterns, there's a sequence and process that you go through, but that doesn't mean there isn't room for creativity in your job. Would you agree?
I'm an accountant. Creativity and accounting just don't go together, Paul. That would end me up in jail.
Yes. Creative accounting off. Yeah. Okay. Fair. Not the place you want to employ your creative muscle. All right. I get that. That's not where you want to flex.
Not where I want to exercise that muscle. No.
No.
Don't customize your general ledger. That's that. Being creative is important in my job, because it does allow me to troubleshoot. If I'm creative and I can think about it in four or five different ways, I can get creative to solve the problem. I can get creative to solve my business requirements that where I may not necessarily execute it the way J.D. Edwards might want it executed. Might tweak a few things. Hopefully it won't break anything. That's always the kicker. But being able to have that ability to be creative or think outside the box a little bit is advantageous, where you're not always following the same process to troubleshoot issues, because the issues are never the same. Mm. You have to be able to step back and think about it differently.
I also imagine when the business comes to you with those business requirements and they have a new, you know, process that they want to roll out, or new capability that they want to introduce, you know, or that they're requesting, you know, your ability to apply that tool set in creative ways to provide that capability comes in as well, right? So, you know, there you do get to flex that muscle when it comes to designing solutions. If you will. So those out there that are worried this is all about troubleshooting and this is all about, you know, structure and whatnot, don't fear, don't fret, as my daughter would say, don't fret. There's plenty of opportunity to flex your creative muscle as well, and how you go about leveraging the JDE toolbox to solve problems.
As a recovering accountant, it was a little bit challenging for me at first to be able to embrace that creativity, because so much of what accountants do is driven by process. You better be able to recreate X, Y, and Z, A, B, and C. It better be traceable. It better be auditable. Coming out of that background did make it a little bit challenging for me at first, where I could be more gray than black and white. But I jumped in, both feet.
As we're trying to share here, like what is the experience like and what does it take to be good in this position and to be effective? You have to be comfortable then in the gray, right? It's not all going to be black and white. It's not, you know, check a few boxes and you always have the same answer. It doesn't quite work that way. Every day is a new experience. Yes, there's going to be patterns to the problems that you troubleshoot, and you'll be able to recognize those patterns and pattern match, so to speak, when it comes to these things. But, you know, there's a lot of gray area out there. And so if you're not comfortable with that, if you don't like that, then, you know, this may not be, you know, the field that you want to delve into. But if you're comfortable with that and you're interested about how a business uses software product like JD Edwards, and you're interested in how a software product like JD Edwards functions and works, you know, this is that sweet spot that you get to play in between and get, you know, a mix of both of those worlds.
Having the courage is huge. I think, as you said, the courage to believe in yourself, in your abilities, the courage to be willing to fail, because what you do the first time may not work, whether it's troubleshooting, whether it's new functionality that you want to introduce and you're doing it in a lower environment first, hopefully. It may not work. It may not work the way you want it to. You might read the documentation and think it's going to work this way, and then you get to the reality of testing it out and you're like, that is not at all the result I was expecting. And nowhere in the documentation does it indicate that it was going to do that.
I thought our documentation was really, really good.
Most of the time, it's pretty good, yes.
You mentioned, you know, hopefully they do it in test first or even in DV first before they do it in production. I have a feeling that this is going to be a repeating theme. Let's hope we're not triggering anybody out there, because I'm sure some of those are traumatic events when you do something in production that you didn't think you, when you didn't think you were in production. I'm sure that left some marks out there.
I've had a few scars from users who have thought they were in the test environment testing something only to realize that they were in production, despite the fact that our environments are colored completely different now. I shouldn't say that because there are people that are colorblind and that would be more challenging for them. That's a communication that we've had with users. Please make sure you're only in one environment at a time.
Mistakes happen.
People are going to make mistakes, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. We have to be okay with the fact that people are going to make mistakes, and there's no way to systematically program around that. At least not one that I've found yet.
No, me neither. Well, you mentioned having a sense of humor, and I do appreciate that you have a sense of humor and that you appreciate my sense of humor. And I hope that we, you know, that can help us be a little bit entertaining for our audience as we continue to interview others and explore this, you know, what it takes to work with JD Edwards and help educate. As a part of that sense of humor, or as evidence of that sense of humor, why don't we go to our Midwesternism of the day, our favorite part of the show, of course. And so what is today's Midwesternism, Chandra?
Today's Midwesternism of the day is bonkers. That's a phrase that's commonly used as a descriptor when something goes beyond what is in the normal or conventional way. It might be fun, impressive, exciting, silly, or even crazy.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe Clayton used that word. I definitely keyed into it because it's not something I hear often. When I'm in the Midwest, I do.
Yes, Clayton used this word, Clayton Seeley, product manager for system administration here at Oracle. He did introduce blockers for the first time in the history of JD Edwards in a keynote at InFocus. It did catch all the Midwesterners' attention and got a good chuckle as well. He said, "That would be bonkers, Paul," was the quote. So,
so there you have it. Communicating to the audience he knew. Very good, Clayton.
Yes.
We'll give him exactly. Key points for communication skills, communicating at your audience
yes.
level.
Yeah, you got a round of applause from the Packerland user group. Yes. So, all right. Well, thank you, Chandra, for talking to me and sharing your background, your experience, and your insight into what it takes to be a good business analyst with the audience. I hope you all out there got some benefit from this and, maybe got introduced to some new ideas, some new concepts, some new thoughts on, what it really takes to be good in this role. On behalf of Chandra and myself, thank you all for joining us today. We hope everyone enjoyed the show and will tune in for our next episode. Catch you all later.
See ya.
Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest on-air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at questoraclecommunity.org/JDEConnection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest JD Edwards community, visit our website at questoraclecommunity.org/JDEdwards. In our upcoming episode, Paul and I have a little fun and gamify things while we discuss some of the terms most frequently heard in the land of JDE. We all know JDE has its own lingo, so tune in to hear if we cover the terms you hear or use most often.